This is Sports Jam. I'm Doug Doyle. A very special guest today, radio and TV personality, author, speaker, businesswoman, philanthropist, longtime friend, Anne Liguori joins us on Sports Jam. Anne, great to have you on the show.
Doug, great to visit with you again. It's been a long time.
It has been a long time. When I covered the U.S. Open, wearing the hat for you today, for 10-10 wins and Bloomberg, I would see you every year at the tournament. But it's been too long since we've seen each other, so it's great to catch up with you. Anne continues to shine as a leader and visionary in the world of sports, media, and business. She is the first woman to host a call-in sports show on WFAN, the original all-sports radio station, where Anne hosted a weekly sports call-in talk show for more than 24 years and continues as the host of Talking Golf with Anne Liguori. And as everybody always knows, hey, what's the story, Anne Liguori, right? And your wonderful podcast, Sports Interview, that has given us an inside look at some of the biggest names in the sports world. And now comes Anne's latest book, Life on the Green, Lessons and Wisdom from the Legends of Golf. And they are indeed legends. She tells personal stories of 12 iconic golfers, including Jack Nicklaus, Nancy Lopez, Tom Watson, Jan Stevenson, Padraig Harrington, Annika Sorenstam, Gary Player, and more. Famed CBS sports broadcaster Jim Nance wrote the foreword to your book, Anne. You and Jim have known each other for decades. Do you remember the first time you met, and why is he special to you?
Wow, good question. First time I met Jim Nance. Well, one of my very first jobs, Doug, out of college when I became an intern for the International Radio and TV Society was at CBS Sports. But I don't even think he was there back then. I mean, I'm talking 1982. That's really dating me now. So I must have met Jim at golf events, you know, because I've covered, 26 Masters. I see him at the Masters every year. I used to see him at Super Bowls that I covered. So I think probably the Masters, where he's just the iconic voice of the broadcast.
A tradition unlike any other, the Masters on CBS Sports.
And then I see him every year when I go. One of my most special moments at the Masters is standing right by the clubhouse as the honorary starters come out that Thursday morning, Jack Nicklaus, Gary Player, Tom Watson, to go to the first tee, you know, to kick off the Masters. And Jim Nance is always there. And we stand kind of together watching these legends come out. So I get to at least visit with them every year at the Masters. So I think that might have been the first time I've ever met the great Jim Nance.
That's wonderful. And I know that relationship, you know, continues on each and every tournament because you're not stopping, you're going strong. And this is a great book for all the interviews that you've done with these legends. They all share some valuable advice for life on and off the course. And I think that's what's important. It's not just about being a golfer. You're going to learn a lot of things about life when you read Anne's book. But I'd like to start off, as you might surmise, what's behind me. And those are not only the hat, but the driver from my dad's golf set. He introduced me to the game of golf, and he could still beat me at 89 on a round of nine. He was much better golfer than I ever will be, and used all woods by the end of his career. But he was a special guy, and I know that family is so special to you. And I'd like to start off by reading your dedication that's in this book, because it touches me so deeply. And it also is one of the themes of Life on the Green. Anne says, I dedicate this book to my heroes, my beloved mom and dad, and my dear brother Jim, who guide me from the heavens. My dad, with his sparkling bright eyes, bright blue eyes, always said, never leave the house without a smile. My mom's strength, courage, and grace shine brightly within me each and every day. And my brother Jim, whom we lost when he was just 22 years old, looked me in the eyes from his hospital bed and lovingly said, go back to New York and follow your dreams. And Anne did just that. It's obvious what they all meant to you, Anne, but can you talk about the life lessons you got from each of them?
Oh, wow. Yeah. My heroes are my parents, for sure. My mother just so wise. We had her until 95. She passed a couple of years ago. I lost my dad to cancer when I was in college, and he was only 63. But yeah, I learned so much from my parents. Foundation is so important for young people, and I grew up in a small town in Ohio, and they were just the best parents in the world, and worked very hard. Certainly, they were both professors, and they were just so giving and so loving, and taught us good morals, which hopefully we can instill in our future generations, right? But and then my brother was a year older than me, and I'm an athlete today because of my brother Jim. After school, everybody would come to our backyard. We had a pretty big backyard at our house in Ohio, and we played every sport imaginable, from kickball to softball to football, baseball, and I'm athletic because of my brother Jim. Everything he did in sports, I had to do, right? So just had a great family, very, very blessed. I have a younger sister and a younger brother. We're all very, very close. And but yeah, we my brother Dan and my sister Jean, we lost my dad and my brother Jim at a young age, and then my mom we were blessed to have her for a long, long time. So we cherish that family and the values they instilled in us all those years.
And if you check out Anne's website, you can see some beautiful pictures and follow her on social media. You can see some of the wonderful pictures that she shared in her final moments with her mom. Before we go into the book, I want to stay on your childhood a little bit. You were so good at tennis that you played on the boys' team because they didn't have a girls' team at the time.
That's right. Can you believe that? Oh my gosh. Well, Title IX had been passed about 2 years before I entered ninth grade. I'm at Brecksville Broadview Heights High School in outside of Cleveland, Ohio. And so we did have some sports. We had volleyball, so I lettered in volleyball. We had basketball, I lettered in basketball. And then in the spring, I wanted to play tennis, but we didn't have a girls' team. So, and then I ran track for the girls' track team. I was able to do both on when they had home track meets the same day that there were home tennis matches. So I walked my way on to I qualified for the boys' team, and then when I was a senior, I played number one singles. So what an experience, I tell you, Doug. Talk about learning how to compete with and against guys, and it prepared me so much for sports broadcasting. When I was in my 20s, starting this career in the Big Apple, I was at CBS Sports, one of my very first jobs out of this IRTS Foundation fellowship program. And it was mostly men, right? Sports is still dominated by guys. So I think my childhood, growing up as an athlete, playing sports with the guys in the neighborhood, and then playing on the boys' tennis team, it really taught me a lot about what it was like to compete with and against guys. And those experiences certainly have been invaluable for me.
And those wonderful experiences, some are shared in Life on the Green, your brand new book, which is really, really interesting to read. I really enjoyed it, Anne, because not only, as I mentioned, does it talk about these legends, but you put it into perspective. And there are some themes, throughout this book, and family is indeed one of them. And that certainly was the case when we start off with Jack Nicklaus, the Golden Bear. He and Tiger Woods considered to be the greatest golfers of all time. Who's the greatest? Well, that's up for debate still. Jack is 84 now. You've also interviewed his son, Jack, too. And family is everything to Jack as well, right?
Oh my gosh. What a thrill to sit down with Jack Nicklaus. I've interviewed him through the years, but all these interviews in this book, Life on the Green, Lessons in Wisdom from Legends of Golf, are brand new interviews just for this book. And Jack gave me a lot of time. And he's was just so willing to share his stories, and family is just so important to him. In fact, that's the name of his chapter. He talks about, I'll read it to you right now. Put family first, and integrity is paramount. So every chapter, we talked a lot about life lessons, what they bring from their iconic golf careers that they use in their day-to-day life. And then if I heard something that they really spent more time on than other themes, I kind of circled back and focused on those themes. And do you know that every one of the legends in the book 12 legends, 6 men, 6 women. They all really focused on different themes, Doug. It was unbelievable. I didn't even have to really coach them on talking about different things that you learned from golf that you can use in your day-to-day life. And of course, Jack Nicklaus talked about putting family first. He and Barbara, his wife of over, gosh, I think 55 years now, right? Their family is just so important. And, you know, Jack, he'd be in the middle of a tournament somewhere, and on a Saturday night after round 3, he would fly back home to attend his son's football game or baseball game and to be there in person. And then he'd fly back to the golf event and often win it on Sunday in the final round.
Jack Nicklaus wins his 6th Masters, his 20th major championship, at the age of 46, 4 years older than anyone ever has been as a champion of the Masters.
Gary Player was 42 when he won. And there goes Nicklaus.
And Barbara, really, the first lady of golf, she's just an incredible woman. I've had the opportunity to visit with her on many occasions. I actually, after the book came out, I was the keynote speaker down at PGA National in Florida. And she was at this women's luncheon and she sat right next to me. And she told me, Jack, her husband, has my book on the kitchen table, and he was so delighted with how the chapter came out. So obviously that made my year, right? So they had 4-5 children and now over 22 grandchildren, and their family reunions must be so much fun. But it's just so great to have, you know, the guy who won the most majors of any player on the planet, such a good role model, and really, really focusing on family and influencing younger tour players. Spends a lot of time at the Bears Club and loves talking to the young PGA Tour players and guiding them and answering their questions. And what a great example to set for the young people.
Don't let that wonderful smile and incredible energy that Anne Liguori gives you fool you, because it's mentioned in the book too. When it comes to interviewing, she'll have this wonderful conversation, but she doesn't shy away from asking tough questions when necessary. And there are other interviews with other golfers at the end of the book that you will find out even tougher questions are asked of people like Phil Mickelson and those like that, and Tiger Woods. But it's your interviewing style that has brought you so much fame in the sports world, because you are honest and you are friendly and you are conversational, and you know how to do it.
Sports Interview gives you an inside look at some of your favorite sports and entertainment personalities, sharing their opinions and success stories. I'm Anne Liguori, your host. Follow me.
10-time champion Annika Sörenstam, what a success story she is. Family also a big part of her success, her husband Mike and her 2 children. And what a role model for athletes, philanthropists, business people, especially when it comes to women. You closely followed her career and interviewed her several times. Can you summarize her impact on golf and beyond?
Wow, Annika. I mean, she's still so relevant today. She's playing all these celebrity tournaments. You know, she won so many events, so many majors, and really dominated the LPGA when she played. And now she's playing in celebrity tournaments. She has the Annika Foundation, and she's helping so many young lives, influencing so many people in a positive way. And her chapter is titled Golf Taught Me Patience and So Much More. And I think one of the biggest lessons that she talks about in her chapter in the book, Doug, is she talks about how there are no shortcuts to success. Work ethic is so key.
On the tee from Sweden, Annika Sörenstam.
Day one of this Volvo Car Scandinavian Mixed, hosted by Henrik and Annika. I'm Richard Kaufman, Alison Whittaker alongside me. Ali, a pretty good way to start our coverage with Swedish golfing royalty.
She learned a very tough lesson. She tells this great story. When she was 15 years old, she was on the range in Sweden practicing. And there are a lot of juniors on the range practicing as well. And it started to pour. The weather just came, it came down, the rain came down in buckets. So she called her father and she told her, Dad, come pick me up. And her father came to pick her up, and it was still pouring. And they drive past the range, and her father sees all the other junior players still out there on the range. And he looked at his daughter and he said, "Annika, there are no shortcuts to success. That's your competition. They're still out there practicing." And she looked at him, she told me, and she said, "Oh my gosh, my own father just called me on my work ethic." And she said, "I learned such a big lesson that day. And to this day, you know, when you think of Annika Sorenstam, you know how much work she put into her career and her success, and still does. And she has a son, Will, who is a very good player, and he's out there all the time and takes after his mother with his work ethic as well. So just so many great lessons from Annika and all the legends in the book. But Annika's still going strong, and you have to admire that work ethic even today, years after she retired, because she's doing so much for the game and to influence young people.
She sure is. I was really fascinated with your chapter about Australian golfer Jan Stevenson and how she was really exploited at the time because of her beauty and what she had to go through making pinup posters to help sell the LPGA and golf in general. And you lay out your feelings in the book about this, but can you tell our audience about golfers or just athletes in general who now promote themselves on social media wearing sexy outfits and whatnot?
Yeah, well, Jan, you know, she was really the face of the LPGA. She came to this country as a, you know, gorgeous rookie, blonde hair, blue-eyed, and Ray Volpe, who was the commissioner of the LPGA, kind of recruited her to be the face of the LPGA, much to the dismay of her fellow competitors. They were not happy that she was using her sex appeal to pretty much promote the tour, and some were jealous that she was getting so much attention, and she didn't even think she'd get into the Hall of Fame all those years later because she spent so much time. She said, "If I had spent more time practicing and playing these tournaments instead of promoting the tour," she said, "she could have won a lot more majors." But yeah, we got into a conversation, Doug, about social media, and you know, I just think so many young women feel that they have to pose scantily clad to get thousands and thousands and some millions of followers. And I just think that really tears down all the hard work that women before them put in to gain respect and credibility in the sports industry. And, you know, I'm just against it. I just think, you know, you can increase your followers by showing off your knowledge and writing compelling posts without looking, you know, appearing half naked. So I just think that that really reduces the respect level of a lot of young women and opens up so many other problems that women have with, you know, the followers who are following them just based on the fact that they're posting sexy photos. So I totally disagree with that approach. And I hope a lot of your listeners agree with me. And I hope a lot of young women don't think they have to do that to gain a good following. You know, show off your knowledge, show off your good work. Don't show off, you know, don't pose half nude just to get the followers. I just don't respect women who do that.
It goes for singers and musicians as well, right? You know, go on your merit. You know, I like to think of, you know, it's unfortunate for Jan Stevenson and somebody like Maria Sharapova, who just happen to be great players, but beautiful as well. So it's not their fault that that's the way they look, but that's how many followers started watching both of them in their respective sports. Renee Powell was the second Black woman to play on the LPGA Tour. She's 78 years old now and is the most recognized ambassador of diversity in golf, a fellow Ohio native. How has Renee touched you, Anne?
Wow, Renee Powell. A lot of people don't even know who Renee Powell is, right? As you mentioned, she was the second African-American female on the LPGA Tour. You know who the first was? Althea Gibson.
Oh, I should know that. We've done many things on Althea.
The tennis champion and legend who played golf later after she retired from tennis. But Renee overcame racism and so many other obstacles. You know, obviously racism, huge, huge obstacle. And she goes into a lot of detail in that chapter and talks about her childhood and how she experienced racism, not only in golf, but also as a young girl going to school in Ohio. Her chapter is titled, "Don't Let Anyone Else Define You and Don't Ever Give Up." And she is just such a great example of somebody who was able to overcome those challenges and just you know, stuck up for herself and never gave up despite how tough it was on all sides. Actually, she moved to the UK and had less issues over there, believe it or not. She married over there and she started really excelling on the European Ladies Tour. And she developed a clothing line for Harrods department store in London. So a lot of people in the UK actually knew her better than here in the United States. And all these years later, she was named an honorary member of the RNA, the Royal and Ancient, which runs St. Andrews. And on top of that, St. Andrews named her an honorary graduate and named a dormitory after her. So she has all kinds of accolades in the golf world, not only in our country, but worldwide. And just this past April at the Masters, I happened to see her and the president, who's a woman of St. Andrews University in Scotland. And it was just so great to, you know, connect with her again after writing this chapter in the book. She said, "Anne, you put so much in that chapter about my life." She's trying to write her own book. She goes, "There's no more stuff for me to say in my own book." But, you know, she's just such a lovely testament of hard work and determination and grit and not letting anybody else define her, just staying in, you know, focused on herself. And not letting everything that really happened to her that she could not control, not letting that stop her progress at all. And to this day, she's such a great voice for inclusion, not only in golf, but in all sports and in society. And she's doing so much. She runs an education center in Ohio at the golf course Clearview that her father literally built with his own hands. And he built that years ago to show that it was really a course for everybody. He didn't want to discriminate, you know, against color or economics or anything. And the course is still going strong. And they just opened up an education center. And she has all kinds of programs to promote inclusion in golf. And she's just doing great things. So Renee is just a very, very special person.
We're going to talk about a few other golfers you have in the book, but I want to turn to your feelings about golf because you mentioned them in the book, and it is it really, to me, I play very rarely, and it's always been the camaraderie, the people who you are with make the difference on whether you have a great round or not, not how you play, but what was the conversations that you had. But you go much deeper into what golf means to you. Tell us about that.
Well, obviously, golf is a metaphor for life, and it basically has provided me a platform that I use professionally and personally. It's just a beautiful game, and you learn so much, all these virtues and all the wisdom shared in the book by these 12 legends, whether it's, you know, pursuing your passion at any age that Gary Player talks about, or not letting fear stop you from attaining your goals, as Padraig Harrington so eloquently talks about. It just teaches you so many life lessons. And golf to me, I mean, every time I take vacation, I'm going to a golf course. Normally it's in Ireland on an incredible links course. And it's my favorite place to play golf because there's just every time you think you've seen the most gorgeous links golf course or parkland course in Ireland, you drive 20 minutes down the road and there's another one. So it's just provided such a beautiful life. And the people in the game, Doug, are just so interesting and so multifaceted. I've never had a bad interview with a golfer because there's so much they want to talk about and so much they experience, and they're smart. They've learned so much if they played golf at a very young age, they've learned how to get organized and they've learned all about time management. And they've learned how to, you know, juggle so many things. And it's just golf is just, and of course, charity. You know, I have my own charity golf event, but golf as a sport in the professional sense gives so much back to charity and to the community. Every PGA Tour stop and every LPGA Tour stop with the pro-ams and the money raised, they give back to charity and they raise millions and millions of dollars for charity. So golf has really consumed my life, and it's a sport that I did not take up until later in life, until my 20s, when I had a primetime show on the Golf Channel. A lot of people don't know I was the first woman to host a primetime weekly show on the Golf Channel, as well as being the first woman to host a call-in sports show on The Fan. And so, but I wasn't a big golfer when I started hosting that celebrity show on the Golf Channel called Conversations with Ann Liguori. But I learned golf in my 20s and took some lessons from some pretty famous instructors. I was interviewing celebrities and the instructors who were teaching the celebrities. So I picked up some good pointers. But golf has really become, a lifestyle, both professionally and personally. So what can I say? It's been a great ride.
It's fun. It's frustrating at times, especially if you're not a good golfer. I'm sure you have a lot more fun. Speaking of fun, the picture behind me is Jackie Gleason and Arnold Palmer
Wow.
back in 1961 that I had given my
Love that
dad,
picture.
and he cherished it until he passed. I guess I could never play around with Padraig Harrington because after reading the chapter that you have on him, he's all about etiquette and all the divots that I create. That maybe I don't always do a great job of fixing, he wouldn't have been able to handle that because he is all about etiquette and making sure that you don't get upset with and don't ruin the game and the integrity of the game.
Welcome back to Paddy's Golf Tips. This was meant to be a bonus tip, but the more I thought about it, I think it deserves longer time. People think that speed is generated by the torso turning, that they think if I can turn harder, I'm going to get speed. Yeah, the torso adds some speed, but minute amount of speed, maybe 5% of the speed is coming from the torso turning extra. What actually happens is most people trying to turn it means they lose complete control of their arms and they lose their speed.
The Irishman has had all kinds of success and finished second a lot and then learned from that. Your chapter on him is the first chapter in the book. Why did you decide to make him chapter number one?
I honestly was shocked that Padraig revealed to me what he revealed. The name of his chapter is called Embrace Fear and Nerves and Learn from Your Mistakes. And he told me that he plays with fear and has played with fear all his life, not just nerves. I can imagine these players being nervous. We all are nervous when we tee it up, right? Especially in front of large crowds. But he, three-time major champion, continues to win on the senior circuit and continues to play PGA Tour events as well. He says that fear heightens his focus, brings adrenaline to his game, and he says it's not a negative thing. He says we all have fear, and he just talks about embracing that fear. So I just thought that was just so courageous of Padraig to admit that not only does he have nerves when he shows up to a tournament, he has fear. Fear of the game not showing up, fear of perhaps shanking the first tee shot. I mean, things that all of us can relate to, right? But here's this major champion. But then I was thinking about it more, Doug, and I thought, well, yeah, sure. There's so much more pressure on him and these major champions to do well. So it's the expectation, not just on that he puts on himself, but that the fans put on him. And there's just so much pressure for these players now, these athletes in all sports. So I can see where I just thought it was just so courageous of him to admit that he is still fearful every time he tees it up.
Yeah, it is a lesson to be learned. I enjoyed the Tom Watson chapter because, it seems to me reading that Tom was always great. I mean, even at a young age, he was always at the top of his game. Nancy Lopez, who emphasizes the power of positivity, told you in an interview that she, when she was just 15, the golfer she idolized at the time, didn't have time to give her an autograph. Yeah, we've kind of all experienced that at times, haven't we? And it impacted her, so she enjoys signing autographs. And you mentioned in Life on the Green that you, like many, thought it was cool that she at one time was married to the Mets 1986 World Series MVP Ray Knight. They divorced years ago, but at that time, it was one of the big power sports couples. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. In fact, I interviewed them for my long-running sports interview cable show. I interviewed Ray Knight and Nancy Lopez together. And, of course, I covered the Mets back when they won the 86 World Series and talked about the Mets throughout my Hey Liguori, What's the Story? WFAN radio days. But he used to caddy for her. And that must have been somewhat uncomfortable and awkward, because, he could get pretty heated with his temper, and I'm sure she probably wasn't happy with some of the clubs that he suggested she hit. But that must have been an interesting dynamic with him caddying for her at some of the tournaments. But, you know, it was a power couple. She is now married to a wonderful guy. Ray and her divorced years ago. But she's a great mother. I know they had a few children. And now she lives here in Florida, and she runs clinics, Nancy Lopez Golf Adventures, all over the world. And she teaches the power of staying positive. In fact, that's her chapter. I'll tell you exactly what I titled it. It's called Stay Positive and Play Happy Golf. That's her slogan, Happy Golf. And, you know, it sounds so cliche to stay positive, but you know as well as I do, Doug, in golf, you're only as good as your last shot. And it is so hard to hit good shots in golf. It's very, even the pros miss putts, you know, from what, 2 feet away from the hole, right? So you have to stay in the present. And you have to forget about your bad shots. You have to stay positive. And, you know, all this wisdom transfers over to real life. In real life, you might have a bad day at the office or something in your personal life goes sideways, right? You have to remember the good things and stay positive, not only in the golf course, but off the golf course as well. And this book transcends golf. You really don't have to be a golfer to enjoy the material in the book and to be inspired and uplifted by these messages from these 12 legends in golf, because we can learn from it. It really goes beyond golf, and Nancy Lopez's messages certainly go way beyond golf. We have to stay positive even when it's so hard to do sometimes.
Last question for you. So there's one time for you to pick whatever course in the world that you want to play, and mom and dad come back to play with you. And you're allowed to bring back one other person, non-family member, right, to join you for your foursome. What course would you go, and who would be that other person to join you, mom and dad?
Wow, great question. Good question, Doug. I'd go to Carn Golf Club in Ireland. It's on the western tip of Ireland, and it has a dunescape. Unlike any other course I've seen, it's a gorgeous links course, but the dunes are as high as some skyscrapers in Manhattan. Okay, so I can play with my parents, even though they didn't play golf. It would have been, you know, they came to a lot of golf events that I played in when they were around. Although my dad, I hadn't really played golf when my dad had passed. I didn't learn golf until after college, and my dad passed.
Even more special then to have this
yeah.
person.
Even more special. So it would be my dad, Frank Ligori, my mom, Cecilia. And, you know, everybody always wants to know who would I have interviewed if I had the chance that I never interviewed. And I would have loved to have interviewed Babe Zaharias. She would have been, what a personality, just reading about her and her lifestyle and the fact that she was, you know, such a champion, not only in golf, but in track and field and such a great athlete, right? And she just sounds like she would have been so much fun. So I think I would say Babe Zaharias. Babe Ruth would have been fun to interview as well. I don't know if, I think he did play a little golf from what I read. I'd say the Babe. I'd say obviously my mother and my father, and that would be some foursome for sure.
A great answer. If I was asked the same question, not in the sports world, my answer is always Louis Armstrong, because I just found him to be one of the most fascinating individuals that ever was put on this earth. This book is something that you definitely want to check out, because whether you're a golf fan or not, you're going to really understand why Anne Ligori is a treasure, right? Not only is she a wonderful author, but she is a connector of history through this book, Life on the Green, with all these great golfers. And there are some that we didn't get a chance to talk about. So I invite you to check this book out. And it's something that you can share. You know, you can share the knowledge with your entire family. Life on the Green, Lessons and Wisdom from the Legends of Golf. And great to catch up with you. Continued success. You are indeed a treasure. And I look forward to seeing you again soon.
Doug, what a pleasure to talk with you. I've always admired your work as well. We go back a long way, and I'm just honored to be on your show. Thanks so much.
Sp-
Sports Jam is a WBGO Studios production. You can hear all the past shows by going to wbgo.org/sportsjam or wbgo.org/studios. You can also find Sports Jam with Doug Doyle on the NPR list of podcasts or wherever you hear podcasts. Until our next Sports Jam session, I'll see you at the game.